Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. So we'll pick up and extend Ian Gately's Jekyll and Hyde idea here by observing that since civilization's dawn, we've viewed the transmogrification of grain, or the grape, as both Mother Nature's miracle elixir and deadly decoction. Our source of creative inspiration and moral impairment, our Shiva. Today, this mercurial relationship often plays out on the news, where we learn that red wine will kill us.
Wine, even a little bit of alcohol, can actually increase the risk of breast cancer.
Or save us.
Ladies, drink your red wine. It could prevent breast cancer.
Or kill us.
I probably told you hundreds of times that red wine is good for your heart. But recent news is raising questions.
Or save us.
It'll help you with good cholesterol. Right. It lowers blood pressure, lowers stress, and overall just has many, many health benefits.
Or maybe not.
Now, it might be good to relax at the end of the day, but it is not good for lowering your blood pressure.
Screw it.
New studies suggest that red wine is exercise in a bottle.
That the fruit of the vine, fermented, could actually be medicinal is a tempting yet potentially dangerous conclusion. Robert Taylor, assistant managing editor at Wine Spectator, tracked that notion back to its birthplace, a 60-minute special from 1991.
Well, the 60-minute piece couldn't have come out at a more perfect time for the wine industry, really. In the 80s, America was obsessed with fitness. I think every house probably had a Jane Fonda VHS tape. ESPN's daytime bread and butter was aerobic shows and weightlifting shows. The 80s were a tough time for wine, especially red wine. Most people drank white wine, a lot of Pinot Grigio.
Just because it's easy to drink.
Sure.
It's not so complex or chewy.
No, it goes down easy.
And you also had the rise of Mothers Against Drunk Driving at the time who, you know, were very effective in changing the discussion over alcohol and the safety of children and anyone on the road.
Absolutely. The Reagan era war on drugs and alcohol had a very significant impact on the culture.
So, November 1991, this piece airs on 60 Minutes.
There has been for years the belief by doctors in many countries that alcohol, in particular red wine, reduces the risk of heart disease. Now it's been all but confirmed.
It was viewed by nearly 22 million households. It was really one of 60 Minutes' most popular segments at the time. They revisited it frequently. Morley Safer certainly was enthusiastic about it. He loved red wine. The impact on wine sales in America was immediate. In 1992, red wine sales rose 39% in the U.S.
Wow.
And they maintained that popularity.
To this day.
To this day.
Now, some of the assertions in the piece are pretty wild, like this one.
A moderate intake of alcohol prevents heart disease by 50%. I mean, this is
50%.
50%.
Who is this guy making these assertions?
Well, Serge Renault was really a maverick at the time. He was a French-Canadian medical researcher and scientist who moved from Bordeaux to Canada at age 20 when he was struck by the incidence of coronary heart disease in North America versus that in France, where people ate so much more fat. You know, the stereotype of the French just eating cheese and butter and foie gras all day long and drinking wine and smoking cigarettes, and yet they had a significantly lower instance of coronary heart disease.
And he came up with the idea of, quote, the French paradox.
Well, he didn't coin the term, but he is considered the father of the French paradox, and he was the first doctor to examine this relationship and postulate that red wine was the key. And his findings led to a groundswell of scientific research, which continues to this day. Decreased impacts of aging, better heart health. There's so many benefits that have been associated with moderate wine consumption since that time.
In the mid-90s, your magazine put a doctor on the cover with the headline, Toasting a Long Life.
We did.
So did it seem like the relationship with alcohol and health at that point was settled?
Settled? I would say that it was beginning to become a reality.
We have a wonderful clip from a tribute to Morley Safer after he died, given by the wine enthusiast.
After that story ran, sales of red wine exploded by more than 40%, jump-starting the sale of wine to decades to come. So let's raise a glass in memory of the TV journalist Morley Safer. Hey, he unraveled the French paradox. May you rest in peace and thank you.
Morley did a lot for the wine community. He followed up on that 1991 report in 2008 with a report on resveratrol, which really seems to be the most promising of the polyphenols found in wine.
Mm-hmm. The original 60 Minutes piece portrays France as the ideal place where the cultural relationship with wine leads to good health. And I'm wondering, do the French media talk about alcohol in the same way?
Well, the French media can't.
They can't. What do you mean?
Well, the great irony of what was happening here in the United States in 1991 is that in France, while coronary heart disease rates were low, alcohol-related deaths were quite high, far higher than here in the U.S., then and now. That's including cirrhosis, liver failure, as well as drunk driving fatalities. In fact, even today, in France, there are estimated to be approximately 50,000 alcohol-related deaths a year, and that's in a country of 67 million. Here in the U.S., that number is 88,000 alcohol-related deaths, and that's in a country of 323 million. So the instance in France is one per about 1,300, whereas here in the U.S., it's one per about 3,600. So in 1991, trying to address these issues, in France, they passed what is known as the Evin Law.
1991. The same year that the 60 Minutes
Absolutely.
Piece
Absolutely. And what that did was prohibit alcohol advertising on television or in film, and it limited how alcohol could be advertised in print. In 2008, it restricted internet advertising for alcohol.
One thing I thought was really fascinating is that advertisers were prohibited from correlating alcohol with happiness or alcohol with sex. And there was a picture of a lovely blonde woman with a Mona Lisa smile on her face and a glass of red wine next to her. That's all. She isn't dressed sexy. She isn't lounging over the glass or a bottle or anything. And this was controversial.
Absolutely.
Which suggests, in a kind of screwed up way, that a pretty woman can't be separated from sex.
And one of them actually included a smile showing teeth.
Was that an issue?
That was among the issues.
Say you grew up in France under Evin's Law, and then you show up in the United States. What would strike you about the advertising here?
To arrive in the U.S. and see advertisements on television of young, healthy, beautiful people having a wonderful time consuming alcohol, that's 100% foreign. Anyone who saw the Super Bowl with the Yellowtail ad, the Australian wine brand, with an animatronic kangaroo named Brew and a model and Yellowtail guy in his bright yellow suit.
Hi.
Hey.
Wanna pet my roo?
Sure, I'll pet you.
The kangaroo is DJing at a party. They're enjoying red wine. You wouldn't see that in France. You couldn't see that in France.
You couldn't see it for beer either.
No.
And you can barely turn around in the U.S. without bumping into a beer ad.
No, which also can't happen in France.
You wrote an obituary for Morley Safer when he died in 2016. Nearly 30 years later, do you think the story that he did still influences the way Americans talk about alcohol?
100%. I think to this day, people consider a glass or two of red wine a night to be preventative, especially for those at risk for cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidence now that moderate wine consumption may delay the onset of dementia. The key is moderate, and a lot of the medical community is hesitant to promote wine in this way because they also don't trust us to drink in moderation.
That's the nanny state at work. No, I mean, seriously, why should they?
Sure, right. Even the cover of Wine Spectator that you mentioned in the mid-90s with the doctor on the cover, looking at it now, I can tell you that the amount of wine in that glass clearly appears to be more than 5 ounces. That's a bit of an overpour in that glass. And people do have a hard time sticking to the recommended daily dose.
Do you happen to know if Evans' Law has been effective in reducing alcohol-related deaths in France?
I know that it's been very effective in reducing alcohol consumption. In fact, wine consumption in particular has fallen by more than 50% in France since 1980. The anti-alcohol movement in France existed well before Evans' Law.
Mm-hmm.
However, per capita consumption in France still dwarfs that of the U.S. In 1980, the French were drinking approximately 80 liters of wine per year per person of drinking age, compared with about 7 liters in the U.S. In the U.S., that number has been steadily rising up to about 11 liters per year, compared with France, which is now down to 40 liters.
Still so, substantial.
So significant changes in those habits in the U.S. and in France in opposite directions.
That is a lot to chew over. I just wish we had a really good Cabernet to go with it.
Brooke, that would be day drinking. Not recommended.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
Robert Taylor is Assistant Managing Editor at Wine Spectator.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.